Hi, I'm WTOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and we are here with...
Edgar Wright, writer-director of Baby Driver.
Which I just saw last night. Man, it's the definition of cool. I mean, all your movies are pretty damn cool, but this one was fantastic. So right off the top, just want to congratulate you on that. Where do you get the idea to do, you know, we've seen sort of these wall-to-wall soundtracks before, American Graffiti, even Pulp Fiction or something like that. But I don't think I've ever seen one that's so intrinsically woven into the plot, you know what I mean, of a guy walking around with his earbuds in all the time. And a plot reason for that, you know, the ring in his ear is almost his vertigo. It's his character flaw. But, you know, where do you get the idea? Are you just listening to your own iPod one day, or where do you get that idea?
I mean, I've had the idea in some form for like 22 years. When I was like 21, I was listening to the first track that's in the movie by the John Spencer Blues Explosion, Bell Bottoms. I was listening to that over and over again. And I thought like this would make a great car chase song. So literally from like listening to that song, I would visualize that sequence. And then... you know, like think of the sort of character that would fit that. And then I came up with the idea of, oh, what if it was a getaway driver who listened to music? What if he was a young getaway driver? And then really, you know, my own relationship to music is similar to Baby's in terms of I use music to motivate me and galvanize me and inspire me. And so that was really what was the sort of genesis of the idea. And also, it wasn't until later, actually, that I put the final piece of the jigsaw puzzle together. Is that it wasn't until I was reading... Oliver Sacks did that book called Musicophilia, and, you know, about the condition of tinnitus, which is something... or tinnitus, rather, as you say here.
Which is what the main character suffers from, yeah.
I used to have attacks of that when I was, like, 7 or 8. And I never thought of the solution of listening to music as a way of drowning out the tinnitus. But it did seem like that it was something that, you know, within this film you could come up with a, you know, you always in action films have the strong silent type. And in this movie have a reason why he does that.
Well, that's why it goes deeper than much action movies, you know what I mean? I mean, you have a reason behind it. What caused yours? That's interesting. At age 7, was there an incident like in this movie that caused it, or is it something you were born with? Or?
I think it was just like a build-up of like pressure. It was something I had to have my ear syringe and stuff. It was extremely painful, and it used to kind of keep me awake at night, the ringing and stuff. So it was not pleasant at all, and I feel very fortunate that I don't have it now. But I know other people, like director friends of mine, who have tinnitus, and, you know, it's something they have to kind of live with, you know. So I thought it was interesting, you know, because it's a movie, it is a heist movie, but you've got this character who has this sort of, hearing defect, and it just makes you think about your relationship to sound and music and how much some people need music in their lives. I know I do.
How do you go about choosing which songs? Because, I mean, there's the bigger ones like the Queen, the Brighton Rock song that stand out in your mind when you leave. But there's like even smaller moments where you're using only pieces of songs. One part I remembered, I guess, when Baby and Lily James' character are in the diner and they're first talking about, you know, leaving it to him and going on their cross-country, you know, getaway ride. Did I hear a little of Steve Miller, Jet Airliner?
Oh, it's the song. It's the song
like the intro. Yeah.
Oh, Threshold.
Right. All right, yes. I remember that's like the lead-in,
yeah.
But then you don't ever cut to Jet Airliner. But I like that you're. How do you think of like that's like almost like, you know, musical genius of you? It's like I'm going to use that one little end clip of that song. I mean, how do you?
Well, you know what's interesting with that Steve Miller thing is originally I had Jet Airliner in the film as well, but it was something like I don't know if you've ever just put your record collection on shuffle. I don't know if you've ever done that with your entire collection, sure. But it is also you get these bizarre like juxtapositions. And so originally I had Jet Airliner in the film as well, but then I was like sort of wanted to sort of mix it up, and it goes to a hip hop song instead. But I thought, oh, I like that intro, and it's just that intro playing in its own right, the Threshold like song. So it's funny you picked up on that, because originally Jet Airliner was in the movie.
Well, that's funnier, but like you're saying, I think it probably was, you know, on like you're saying, when you have these clips of the songs, it must have just gotten, the end of that must have gotten clipped off, and for me, I thought it was the beginning of Jet Airliner, but it's the end of the previous song. Interesting.
Yeah, it's on the album, it's called, that track is called Threshold, and then it goes into Jet Airliner. Yeah.
I just still think it's genius, even if you don't use Jet Airliner, it sets up that expectation for anyone that knows that song. It's, you know, that Jet Airliner is all about, you know, gotta go, you know, leaving town and all that stuff. So it kind of works perfectly for that. So anyway, I just wanted to let you know, I picked that up and I'm impressed. So that's how you sort of, we just talked about how you chose the songs. But what I loved about the movie is how it so perfectly matches the visuals. I mean, even in the end, some of the shootouts, the gunfire, the blast is right on beat, you know. How is that actually done? Is that done in post, or is it like a music video where you're like listening to it, you know, while you're shooting it, or, you know, how do you actually get it to match up like that?
Yeah, it's basically, we're listening to the song on set.
You have to be to make
Yeah, so all of the music was cleared before we started shooting, and therefore you could rehearse with it. So with the actors and the choreographer and the stunt guys, you know what the music is, and also then you can break it down into sections. So like in that sequence in the parking lot to Hocus Pocus, you know that like, okay, this is the guitar bit, so he's running. Now there's this accordion breakdown, so this is him breaking into a car. Now there's this other guitar bit, so now he's driving. Now there's this bit with this flute solo, this is where they're firing at the time of the music. So you literally sort of break it down like a beat sheet where it's like these are the moments and this is where they go in the movie. So it's very precise, and on one hand it's very complicated because there's no scene where something is happening for no reason. It's all happening to the music. So it's very complicated, but at the same time, you know, the cast and the crew all know exactly what's happening. Now, in that particular bit, say there's a scene bit where John Hamm is like firing in time with the guitar.
Right.
So most of the time you could play the music out loud or they could have it in their ears. But when you've got a blank firing gun, that will wipe out the sound of any playback. Right. So in those particular things, it's almost like being back in the schoolyard. You basically had to teach John his beats. So you're like, okay, so John, on this day, you come out and you go bang, 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 bang.
Wow.
And then John B. goes, okay, got it. And then he recover the rehearsal. Then he does it for real. And he did it. Like, by that point, the song is so in everybody's head. It's just like you're doing it in time. So it isn't something where, in theory, you could cheat and in editing tweak the timing. But we really did it for real, like on set. And I think it's something that I think really works for the movie is that things are always on beat. There might be a scene later where Ansel Elgort's coming into a diner when the Barry White song is playing.
Yep.
And during that intro, like Ansel like closes his car door and opens two diner doors in time with the bass on that track.
Right. And that's when he looks over and sees, right?
And when he sees her. Yeah. Oh, yeah, and then turns around, exactly. So it's like it's all like building, so that's all in one shot. And so it's that thing where it's like Ansel's sitting in the car and it's like, first base, get out.
Yeah.
Second base, open the outer door. Third base, open the inner door. You know, like sort of. So it's just like sort of they're doing it to the pieces of the music.
Yeah, yeah. Well, like you said, it makes it more challenging, but at the same time, it gives you a little bit of a spine and a structure. So in that scene you're talking about, I love the insert shot of the half coffee pot shattered on the ground. I love that shot.
Oh, yeah.
I love your little insert shots. But beyond that, you have a lot of, you know, seemingly complicated single takes. There's one early too. What was the toughest one of the single takes to get?
Well, the opening sequence where you've seen Ansel Elgort in the pre-credit sequence, you've seen him be like a badass getaway driver, and then immediately afterwards, just to sort of really compound the idea that he's a young apprentice, you see that he also his job to go get the coffees. So I kind of love this idea of like seeing like your amazing sort of fearless getaway driver is also the gopher on the coffee run. So you see this 3-minute shot all set to Harlem Shuffle by Bob and Earl where Ansel goes to get the coffees and comes back and sort of, you know, is in his own little bubble with his headphones in. And that's all in one long Steadicam shot. And it was also on the first day of the shoot. So it was the first slate that we did.
Oh, wow.
And I think we maybe had a 10-hour day because we worked continuously because of the light. So we started filming in February, so it was a 10-hour day. So I think we shot in 10 hours, we shot 28 takes.
Wow.
And we used take 21. I know that much.
That's crazy. That's crazy. Well, I mean, in order to pull all this off, you mentioned the lead actor. I mean, we've seen him in, what was he in? He was in Fault in Our Stars and some of the Divergent. I guess he was a Shailene Woodley cast, I guess, all the time.
Yeah.
How did you decide on him? And man, he shoulders this movie and almost shows a different, stronger, cooler, silent type in this movie.
Yeah, I mean, when I, like I said, I've been working on it for so many years, but I, like, sort of 3 years ago, I was like, this is the next movie I'm going to make. I put all of my energy into getting Baby Driver made. So literally the first question you get asked by the studio is like, who's going to play Baby? Because, like, which young actor could, like, do this part? And you know, there's a lot of talk of lots of young actors that were out there, but Ansel was one of the first people that came up, one of the first people that I met. And very quickly after, like, a couple of, like, you know, reading the role with him, I thought, this is the guy, you know, because also he's very charismatic. He can really hold the camera. And then on top of that, like, sort of, he's, you know, got some kind of, like, sort of musical background where he can play instruments and he makes music and, you know, he can dance. You know, he's done sort of some action before. And so it was a thing in terms of we're going to have to teach him how to drive. I mean, he could drive, but I mean, teach him how to stunt drive.
Right.
But he actually does a lot of his stunts in the movie as well, which is great. Like, especially in the kind of foot chase. A lot of that is him, which is really exciting. So I think he did an incredible job in the movie.
Absolutely. Well, and like you're saying, there's the bigger stunts, but even the little moments, that's where you're like, all right, I dig this guy. Like, you know, swinging on the chin-up bar into the kitchen.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Little things you put in there. I don't know how much of that's you or him, but, you know, I think it's a great, great role for him. And, you know, people are all going to be like, they're going to hold him, compare him and Ryan Gosling drive. You know, those are going to be the two getaway drivers we think about from this era. Lily James, going down the rest of the cast. I mean, similar to, he was in Fault in Our Stars and he shows a different side. She was in Cinderella. And now you see her as this, you know, this cool, quirky little diner. A lot of your movies have these sort of, Trojan horse with a zombie movie or a sci-fi movie. But there's a little romantic, you know, relationship in there. How important was she, and what does she bring to that love story?
I think the movie, because it is on paper, it's like a car chase action heist movie. But you know what the hero is aspiring to is he wants to kind of like have a regular life.
He wants to get out of that. Yeah.
He wants to get out of it. So it's almost like the reverse of Goodfellas. At Goodfellas, you start with a teenager who wants to become a gangster. And in this movie, you start with a gangster who wants to be a regular Joe.
Who delivers Goodfellas pizza.
He does. By the way, is a real place in Atlanta.
Really? I've heard of Godfather's pizza. I've never heard of Goodfellas.
Well, I guess it's a knockoff. Like, Goodfellas is a pizza place in Atlanta, which Atlanta natives sort of see the movie and said, you use Goodfellas pizza and wings. It's one of those places that's only open after. It's the place that's open after midnight.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you want to eat at 2 o'clock in the morning, Goodfellas and pizza and wings is your place.
Yeah, yeah.
So Lily James, I think, is just kind of like sort of the heart of the movie in a way, in terms of she represents like a normal life, and she's in a way like the first real person he's met. Everybody else that he's working with in crime is like living under these like nom de plumes and monikers, and like they're even sometimes kind of pretending they're people they're not. You know, sort of nobody, none of the other robbers, they're all like sort of living this kind of secret life. And yet, so you sort of, even as you work with them, you don't know them.
They have pseudonyms.
All have pseudonyms. They're all like sort of kind of mythologizing themselves in a lot of ways. So like Lily James playing Deborah is like sort of like a real person that he meets. And also that actually she, you know, is like an escape from the life that he's in. And Lily's such a great, like, empathetic, sort of, like, emotional actor that you just kind of completely fall for her. And I think the thing is that with her and Ansel actually having these two young leads is they treat the romantic story very sincerely. Like, I think you really, like, buy into it because they did.
Yeah.
And I think the way they play those scenes is really, you know, sort of affecting and sweet.
Yeah, I think so. To your point, you know, Baby is sort of, you know, his recording people and remixing and everything is sort of something he keeps to himself. But with her, she takes the recorder and says it to him. So she's the first regular person that goes in on it with him in a way.
Yeah, I think so, because he's living quite a solitary existence at the start. And even the thing of him making these mixtapes of, like, people talking about him, or, like, you know, it's his way of mythologizing himself. So I think at the start of the film, he's compartmentalized what he does into the idea that he's not really a criminal, he's just the driver. Now, obviously, that isn't like the reality of it is he is complicit in these crimes. Right. And obviously in a court of law, you know, a getaway driver would get the same sentence as the robbers of a bank. So I think there's this idea at the start of the movie that Ansel's like fooling himself that he's not really a criminal. And in a way, like the thing about it is like the start with the, you know, that kind of like romantic idea of being, you know, a daredevil getaway driver. But then as the movie goes on, you start to, you know, introduce the tough reality of being a criminal and what that really means and, you know, the repercussions of your actions.
Yeah, losing people that you love or even your own life. Well, before we go, we got to ask the henchman. We got to talk about how John Hamm kind of casting against type from the Don Draper. You know, it's cool to see that sort of dark side, and he definitely gets a big play up in the end. And Jamie Foxx, too, show another side. The toughest gangster of all of them in this. But did you try to pick guys that were well-established, but then you could show sort of another side of them?
Well, I think the thing that Jamie, Kevin, Spacey, and John have in common is they're all very charming performers, and in a way, some of their early, like, sort of parts in the movie where they might be a bit more funny or, like, charming is really just setting you up for a full sense of security because they're all, like, very bad guys. And Baby is very much in a nest of vipers. So I like this idea of having these extremely well-known, charismatic performers that you think you might know what they're like, and then they reveal, like, sort of their, you know, sort of true depths of how menacing they can be. So I just like, I mean, with all of them, it's a really nice trick to play on the audience is where the sort of the, you know, the kind of the penny drops and you realize that sort of quite how vindictive and desperate these people can be.
Well, I know we got to wrap up. Final question. We've had a lot of critics and the like write about, you know, your journey and, you know, Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, you know. But how do you think you've grown from those movies? What's your own through line and where you see yourself with Baby Driver even better off than even those great works?
I don't know. I mean, those things are for other people to say, not me. I mean, I think the thing is that I just kind of approach each story. They're all things that are like I'm very passionate about. And they're all like movies that like I you know, they see it into my brain. It's like you sort of, you dream up these movies and you think, I have to make this because I have to get it out of my head, onto paper and then onto the screen. So it's really just a sort of like a persistence of vision, like sort of to get these things made. And what's nice is that a lot of people have sort of like commented about Baby Driver being a departure or a surprise for me, which is great, and I'm very sort of like flattered by that. The irony is that this idea existed before like right. Shaun of the Dead and Spaced. So I think it's sort of just if I get the opportunity, I'd love to continue doing like original movies and doing different stories. You know, that's not to say I wouldn't do a sequel to something or like, you know, but I've been very fortunate so far that I've been able to tell these original twists on established genres.
Awesome. Well, this one's a great one. So it was nice meeting you, and thanks so much. Congrats on a great movie.
Thank you.